Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, the restrictions on ferries during the COVID crisis, a new type of wind energy from the sea, and how Irish fishermen aim to keep our shops supplied with fish. Earlier this week, I went to Dublin and Rosslare ports to check if social media reports that lines of cars were coming in from the UK unchecked were true. I watched ferries being unloaded at both ports, and just about four or five cars got off each one, and most of those, I spoke to them, were Irish people coming back for economic reasons. Those social media reports of floods of UK visitors coming in are not true. Our regular contributor, Hugh Orme, has been looking at the restrictions the COVID crisis has put on sailing and ferries.
The most obvious impact of the virus is on shipping services, especially those for passengers and cars sailing between Ireland and France and Ireland and northern Spain. In the old days, when ships were the only means of global transport, epidemics were slow to spread globally, but that's all changed with the development of aviation. Ferry companies such as Irish Ferries are continuing to operate their services. Passengers using these and other ferry services have to have documentation to show why they are travelling. For sailings between Ireland and the UK, governments in both countries advise against all non-essential travel. Similarly, if anyone arrives by ship in France from Ireland, they'll need to have documentation explaining their need to travel. But if people are travelling on ferries, they have to maintain social distancing, just as they do on land. And one result of the crisis is that hauliers travelling with their trucks from Ireland to mainland Europe and vice versa have demanded an end to sharing cabins on ferries. Some ferry services, like those operated by Brittany Ferries, have cancelled their sailings from Ireland to France and Spain, while other ferry companies, such as Irish Ferries, are continuing to operate, although with a lot of onboard restrictions. When passengers are checking in, they are asked about any contact they've had with COVID-19 cases and whether they've developed any specific symptoms. If the answer is yes in either case, passengers will need to have specific authorization from the health authorities to proceed with their journey. For people who are intending to travel by ship in the near future, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has a dedicated helpline, a Dublin number, 613 1733. Passengers are being advised by the department to avoid all non-essential travel abroad, including by ship. Some ferry companies, like Irish Ferries, are still sailing, but with a lot of onboard restrictions. But on the other hand, Brittany Ferries has cancelled all its sailings to France and Spain. If someone has booked a sailing on Brittany Ferries, they'll get a voucher that can be redeemed for sailing at a later date when the COVID-19 virus epidemic has fizzled out. One particularly interesting sailing that Irish Ferries has had to cancel has been a wine-tasting cruise on the W.B. Yeats ferry that was due to sail at the end of April. For the ferries that are sailing, strict controls on board mean that the public areas of the ships involved are getting a thorough cleaning, while shops and food outlets on board have all been closed. And to encourage social distancing, bars, onboard cinemas and club-class lounge services have been closed down. And the company points out that all air conditioning systems on boarded ships use 100% fresh air that isn't recirculated. But one of the side effects of the crisis on the maritime sector is that the high volume of demand from customers means that refunds can take up to 30 days to be processed. But at least if someone is returning by ship from Britain or mainland Europe, there are no entry restrictions at present when they arrive home at an Irish port. The upshot of all these restrictions affecting ferry companies is that while many people had been planning on sailing to France or Spain this summer for holidays, all the onboard restrictions may be inhibiting. But for hauliers responsible for vital exports and imports of goods from and into Ireland, it looks very much as if they're going to have to put up with all the restrictions on board ships in order to keep the Irish economy ticking over. The truth is that the COVID-19 virus has meant a whole raft of new regulations for passengers and freight travelling between Ireland and Britain and between Ireland and France and Spain. But as with all things in life, they usually come to an end. And exactly the same will happen with COVID-19 related sea travel, now made much more difficult and demanding. Similar restrictions also apply to boat clubs around the country and all their sailing events planned for this summer. But hopefully at some time in the not too distant future, we'll be able to look back on COVID-19 and its effect on Irish shipping services and perhaps even wonder whether too much fuss has been made of the crisis. The big if is that at present, no one in authority or in the maritime industry generally has the slightest idea when this crisis, which came out of the blue, is finally going to come to a long overdue end.
Hugh Oram. As you hear, we recorded that in a park near us here under the watchful eye of the local Robin. When the COVID crisis finally comes to an end, we'll all be looking at the economy, how we're going to do things differently. One project underway is a floating wind energy project planned for the Irish Sea. Lorna Siggins has this report.
Erebus was the personification of deep darkness and shadows born of chaos in Greek mythology, and it was also the name of one of two ships taken by polar explorer Sir John Franklin, along with Irishman Francis Crozier, who was second in command, to find the Northwest Passage. It's now the name of an ambitious floating wind farm project planned for the Celtic Sea off Wales, spearheaded by a County Waterford renewable energy and aquaculture company named Simply Blue Energy. Significantly, the company has secured the support of French energy giant Total for Erebus. Simply Blue Energy was founded by Sam Roach Perks, a Waterford-born civil engineer by training with extensive experience in the property market and a founder of Delaney's Irish pub chain in the Far East. He spoke to Seascapes about the background to this venture.
Simply Blue Energy is a company, an Irish company based down in Ardmore, County Waterford. The company is a blue economy developer. So what does that mean? That means basically we're working in sustainable renewable energy. So what is floating wind? So floating wind basically is a combination of a semi-submersible oil platform and an offshore wind turbine. So it's bringing two proven technologies together, which makes the challenge a little bit easier maybe than wave. The Erebus project, we're delighted to be working in collaboration with the American floating wind technology company, Principal Power. And the site Erebus is 45 km from shore off the coast of Pembrokeshire. It's a proposed 96 megawatt farm. So that'll look something like maybe 9.5 megawatt turbines. So why floating wind? Well, floating wind gets away from the depth constraint. So the depth constraint is most monopiles now are sub 50 meter depth. So the wind resource can be the good wind resources, 80% of them certainly in Irish waters, are at depths of greater than 50 meters, and also further away from shore. So if you just take the curvature of the Earth, for example, over 40 kilometers. It's very difficult to see them. It goes out of sight lines. We have been working on the Erebus project for the past 3 years in Wales and in Southwest UK. A year ago, we started a process to look for a partner to join us, to bring in a partner that would not just bring, a balance sheet strength, which we need, but also bring know-how with regard to large infrastructure projects like floating wind offshore projects. And we're delighted that we concluded with Total earlier in March. Not only are Total bringing huge experience with large engineering offshore, but also a great cultural fit. Maybe that's that Irish-French fit that works quite well, as long as we're not on a rugby pitch. So Erebus, and the name Erebus, where that comes from, just a little bit of history. Erebus was built in 1826 in Pembroke. It was James Clark's ship that went to Antarctica under sail. And its sister ship was Terror, actually, which was captained by Francis Crozier, the Irishman. An incredible journey in the early 1840s. They got through right to Antarctica, the main continent itself. Spent about 2.5-3 years there before they came back. Then in 1846, it was Sir John Franklin used it as his ship to go and try and find the Northwest Passage, as well with Terror. As well, Terror on that last voyage was captained by Crozier, and it was last seen in 1846. So they put an engine in it. They had no engine in Erebus or Terror when they made it to Antarctica. Put an engine in it to go to find the Northwest Passage, and then both ships were lost and only actually found in 2014. And 2016, respectively. So the project is well underway at present. We are, we've commissioned local consultants. Bird surveys commenced last September. We're using as much local supply chain as we possibly can. And indeed, we're looking at projects in Ireland and would like to follow a similar pattern and follow a similar, what we call a stepping stone approach. And what that means is basically if you start, although 100 or 96 megawatts is a huge project, still in offshore wind, it's relatively small. It's test and demonstration, is what it's called in under Crown Estate rules. And our suggestion is we start at 100, then move to circa 300, and then you go on to commercial scale, which is well over, half a gig up to a gig. And I think that's what we should be proposing for Ireland as well. Ireland has an immense resource. The technology is now here. It's viable, it's financeable. As a country, this is a huge asset. I often think about it's a little bit like standing in Aberdeen in the 1960s, looking out and knowing that the oil was there, and this is the opportunity. And hopefully as a country, we grab this opportunity for the future. Erebus itself will be, its intended timeline is mid to late 20s that it's commissioned. And indeed, we're then working on other projects. So working on other projects in the UK and also looking to work on projects here in Ireland. So again, really pushing that Ireland should be looking at this enormous opportunity.
Peter Coyle, who's chairman of the Marine Renewables Industry Association, also gave me his reaction to Erebus.
Simply Blue Energy's Erebus project is a very significant development in the Irish business world for two reasons. First of all, here we have a small Irish startup from County Waterford winning the support and trust of Total, the French oil company, which is one of the world's largest companies. And they've done so for a project which will be in the floating wind area, a very novel and demanding technology. The Erebus project off the Welsh coast, in fact, will be the largest offshore wind project to date. And if it works off Wales, it'll work off Ireland and will have a very significant impact in the long term in the exploitation of our huge offshore wind resource. The other thing I want to say is that it's very significant that an accomplished Irish businessman like Sam Roch Perks, the CEO of Simply Blue Energy, who's had a stellar business record in Asia and in Sweden, and who had a choice of avenues to follow to extend his fortune. It's very significant that he's chosen to go into offshore renewable energy. And this indicates that offshore renewable energy is going to be a major Irish business over the next 20 years. And I hope that other entrepreneurs will follow his lead.
Lorna Siggins on Erebus. Captain Brendan Ford spent 50 years at sea and is now happily retired in Dublin. He's been writing and telling us of some of his memories of those times over the past couple of weeks. Captain Ford has been all over the world several times, but he started his career near his native Arklow back during World War II.
Growing up in Arklow in the 1930s, it was impossible to ignore the sea. Looking out from our house, we could see the Countess of Wicklow Memorial Hospital, a row of rolling sandhills, and some ruins of the Kynock War munitions factory that blew up on the 21st of September 1917, killing about 20 persons. Usually a small ship or two would be at anchor off the pierhead awaiting entrance to the dock. The harbour master lived next door to us, appropriately named Cyclone Desmond. As a young boy, I heard the word Dutchman mentioned. The term had little to do with the people of that country. In fact, it was a modern motor ship, usually sailing under the Dutch flag, with a characteristic shape conveyed by her rigid upright derricks and usually with a small raised bridge superstructure. It was very different from the three-masted schooners owned and manned by my townsmen and family, some uncles and many cousins on my mother's side of the family. My grandfather was an ex-lightshipman, and some of his sons were still at sea on various types of ships. I cannot remember much talk of fishing vessels, with one noteworthy exception, the Don O'Connell, which had helped rescue some of the survivors of the passenger liner Lusitania torpedoed in 1915 off the south coast. My mother told me we left Arklow as a way of deterring her sons from following seagoing careers. But in fact, my father was in the legal profession, and the better prospect available in Dublin was probably the real reason why the family moved there. On the 30th of March 1917, when my mother was still at school, the teacher called her out of the class and told her she was required at home. "Go home, you will be wanted," the teacher said, with no explanation given. At home, she discovered that the Arklow lightship Guillemot, on which her father served, had been sunk off the Wexford coast a few days earlier by a German submarine. Fortunately, her father had not been on duty that day, which the teacher would not have known. Nevertheless, the memory of that day never left my mother, and she regularly told us this story, obviously conscious of the dangers of the sea, especially in wartime. In 1933, during the Economic War, a number of sailing vessels were laid up in Arklow, including a three-masted sailing vessel, or schooner, called Happy Harry. She had been built at Millam near Borough-in-Furness in 1894 and was owned by a local mining company, bringing cargoes of iron ore from Millam and returning with coal. Later, she was bought by some Arklow ship owners. Eventually, she was equipped with a 100-horsepower engine, which enabled her to resume trading on Irish-British coastal voyages. Captain James Keg Hagen, my mother's brother, was a part owner of the vessel and was in command. She spent years bringing coal to Ireland and returning to Britain from Arklow with pit props. World War II began in 1939, and as a result, Happy Harry had the word ERA and our national tricolour flag painted large on both sides of the vessel to let the world know that she and Ireland were neutral. All Irish ships had to do this, which did not always protect them from a German torpedo. Witness the sinking of the Irish Pine on the 15th of November 1942, 2 days from Boston, with the loss of 33 crew. The captain of the attacking submarine, U-608, made no note in his diary of seeing the Irish neutrality markings. In 1943, Happy Harry was regularly in Dublin, carrying cargoes of firewood from Arklow, making about 24 trips from January to July in that year. I was aged 11 at the time and was attending Sculwira Marino. Captain Hagen, Uncle Jim to me, was visiting my mother, and somehow my elder brother Frank and I managed to get the okay to join him on the Happy Harry sailing from Dublin to Arklow. We sailed south early next morning. It was the August bank holiday weekend. It was a great adventure for us two boys to sail on a real schooner at this period. Apart from the romance of sailing, there was the very real danger of enemy action. I was really thrilled to be under sail on the schooner. As we crossed Dublin Bay, one of our National Marine Service motor torpedo boats came near and hailed us. We had a marine service at that time. The title Navy was to come in 1947. I remember the pride we felt in seeing the modern motorised torpedo boat. Very difficult to get hold of at this time, as Britain, being at war, needed all the ships they could get. We passed south inside Docky Island under sail, possibly using our engine as well. And as we entered the Irish Sea, I began to regret my enthusiasm for seafaring. I experienced the pangs of extreme seasickness, such as I never did again in my entire seagoing career. My brother Frank, who like myself would later serve on ships all over the world, was unaffected by this and seemed to be exempt.
Brendan Ford on the start of his 50 years at sea. And we'll have more from Brendan in a few weeks' time. Now at the moment you're still getting fish in your supermarkets and your fish shops, and that's down to the dedication of some Irish fishermen. Patrick Murphy from the Irish South and West Fish Producers Organisation told me that trawlers were still going to sea.
Fergal, yeah, we have to keep supply going to our supermarkets and our customers and to the domestic market that we're trying to develop, you know. So there are some boats out there.
At the start of the year, the weather was very bad. You missed maybe 3 months. Then, because of COVID, you took some time to get organised, but now the people are fishing again.
Well, some are, you see. The markets in Europe have completely and utterly collapsed. So the markets that were there are no longer there. The Spanish fleet is tied up. The Danish fleet is tied up. The French fleet is tied up. Not all of them, but the majority of them. The English fleet, you know, so the only ones that were actually fishing, and because it was a good, reasonably cheap-priced fish, was the pelagics, the likes of the mackerel, you know. So Africa was mad for that fish, and it was reasonably priced, whereas the demersal is different. You have high-end products such as prawns and monk, and then you've cod, and even hake is considered an expensive fish, even though it doesn't get back to the boats that way, you know.
So the fish that are being caught at the moment by Irish trawlers in Irish waters, are they for the Irish market or are you exporting them?
The vast majority of them are for the Irish market. And look, we have to regulate what we have and to make sure that everybody gets a fair share, you know, and that boats that choose not to go fishing, it's more than a choice. They have no choice, because if every boat goes fishing, the market will not take the product.
Sure.
And there will be nothing for the product. And it's an expensive business. You have to pay for your diesel and your expenses, Fergal, before you ever leave the pier wall, you know.
So have you been able to organise who goes when, where, yet?
Not yet, no, because as a producer organisation, we're one of four. We're consulting with our other organisations. But first of all, you have to have the right foundation in place. And to make that foundation, we have to get aid from Europe, like every other business, to be able to allow boats to tie up to the pier wall. You're talking about boats with hundreds of thousands worth of technical gear and
so on. So that's when they're tied up, they're still operating at a big cost.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a never-ending cost. Look, the sea is merciless. If you don't mind yourself on it, you can pay the ultimate price, and people have paid the ultimate price. It's the same for boats. It's a corrosive substance, you know. Salt water eats away its metal. So you have to keep your boat trim and right and maintained, putting on paint.
Now, you've been onto Europe, the European Commission, European Parliament and the Minister for Agriculture for aid to get you over what's happened already this year due to the pandemic.
Look, I have to give credit where credit is due in this regard, and that's to Mr. Sean O'Donoghue from Killybegs, another colleague of mine from one of the POs. He put together the package with the other leaders in the organisations to the Commission. They accepted every word of what was being said because everything was true, and they themselves have acted, and they are changing the legislation to allow us to access money that's there, that's not spent in the different countries, and it's back to our minister and the department to fill in the last leg of the journey to make sure that there's money there for our industry.
You've met him Michael Creed. What reaction have you got?
At this stage, we didn't know how Europe was developing and what would Europe give us. Now that's clear, so we're hoping to meet with the minister, hopefully very, very shortly. But the fishing industry is really, really in trouble here. We need to be talking to our minister, because a lot of the boats that have voluntarily tied up aren't earning anything, but they still have all the costs. And this has all culminated now in a perfect storm for fishermen. They're really under pressure.
But in the meantime, during this pandemic, we will have fish in our shops.
Oh, look, we gave that assurance. I'd say fishermen will not leave their fellow country people down. They know the emergency situation that we're in. And look, hopefully it will plateau and we'll start to see it recover and things go back to normal. But all fishermen won't be found wanting. Look, these are people that risk their lives to go out to sea in all sorts of weathers and everything else. And there's no guarantee that they're going to come back in with money from their efforts, you know. So these people will never be found wanting.
Thanks to Patrick Murphy. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We'll be back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme is podcast and it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact the programme, our email is seascapes@rte.ie. If you're lucky enough to be anywhere near the water over the next week, stay safe.